Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. We are still talking all things Brazil 2014 qualifiers, and I'm delighted to delve into a little bit of South American football now with one of our favourite guests to have on the show, the man who knows it all south of the border, Mr. Tim Vickery, joining us today. Tim, how are you today, mate?
Yeah, very well. Lots of things to talk about, little time to do it. So let's get the ball rolling.
Let's get rocking and rolling. First and foremost, Tim, what's going on with the stadia for Brazil 2014? Because we're hearing there's all sorts of problems with the Maracanã and the running track stadium as well down there.
Indeed, yes. This is not Brazil at its best. It's almost like a metaphor for the problems of infrastructure that Brazil is having. One of the problems which is preventing Brazil from fulfilling its economic potential. The Maracanã is running late. It's not going to be 100% complete for the Confederations Cup, I wouldn't have thought, especially in terms of the work around the stadium, but it will be serviceable. I don't think there's any problem with it for the World Cup in 2014. The big story at the moment, though, is the NGL, as it's officially known, the Estádio Olímpico João Avalanche, which is due to host the Athletics in the 2016 Olympics. So it will be the centre of global attention in 2016. Now, this is a stadium that was only built in 2007 for the Pan American Games that Rio hosted, and it's already in danger of falling down. It's been closed this week because specialists have said that in strong winds, that roof is in danger of collapsing. So this is a huge problem. Obviously, the headlines are going to the fact that this is the Olympic Stadium in 2016. But in the short term, it's much more of a problem for Rio's football clubs, because they've got nowhere to play big derbies in the city at the moment. With the Maracanã closed, the NGL, or the Estádio João Avalanche, also now closed. The only big stadium in the city is Vasco da Gama Stadium, San Januario, which was built in 1927. It's seen better days. The area around it has certainly seen better days. And the police will only accept games to be take place in this stadium if there's a 90-10 split between the two supporters. So that obviously rules out playing big local derbies in that stadium, where you're going to get a 50-50 split. So bizarre as it sounds, one of the world's great soccer cities, Rio, doesn't have a stadium to stage its big derbies, which will now all have to be staged outside the city. It really is a remarkable story, and I suppose it shows the dangers of having Brazilian politicians with money in their pocket on one hand and construction companies on the other, because we've seen so many self-created emergencies in the run-up to stage these major tournaments. The stadium, which is now being closed, running late for the 2007 Pan American Games. The stadium's running late for the Confederations Cup this year. And all of that money ends up coming out of the taxpayers' pocket. So a few disgruntled Brazilians at the moment, and rightly so.
And could also see the prices for everybody travelling to Brazil for the World Cup and the Olympics going up a bit as well there, Tim. It's obviously not working too well for Brazil on the pitch as well as in the stands and the stadiums, of course. They haven't won. They're only playing friendlies at the moment, obviously, but they haven't won a game since I think it's October of 2012, apart from the win on penalties against Argentina. Is there a worry that these friendlies, which were meant to be treated quite seriously, aren't either being treated seriously enough or the quality just isn't in this Brazil side at the moment?
Well, the friendlies are being treated seriously because it's all Brazil have got. And there are players there very, very keen to secure their place in the World Cup squad. So the friendlies have been taken seriously. The preoccupation comes much more in the problems presented by the team on the field. Scolari, now Luis Felipe Scolari, in his second spell as coach, three games without a win. The defeat against England, the draw against Italy when Brazil were winning 2-0 at one point, but were really outplayed in that game. And then the 1-1 draw with Russia, a draw probably a fair result, but Brazil saved with a last-minute goal. Scolari will trade any setbacks and disappointments now for success in a year's time. So his argument will be, if these games help whip us into shape, that's a price that he's quite prepared to pay. There'll be one or two things he'll be happy about. He reinstated the centre-forward, and his predecessor, Mano Menezes, had ended up playing a formation you could probably best describe as 4-2-4-0 without an out-and-out target man. And that's the first thing Scolari changed. He's brought in Fregi of Fluminense, once of Lyon, as his target man centre-forward, and Fregi has scored in all three of these games. So he is now unquestionably Brazil's number nine. Scolari also has taken the decision to recall Julio César, the Queen's Park Rangers goalkeeper. That was seen as a little bit controversial at the time, but Julio César has had three excellent games now for Brazil. One of the problems, though, is just how busy Julio César is having to be. The fact that Brazil are giving their opponents so many opportunities. So that there are problems defensively. Also up front, you do wonder if Brazil at the moment are just caught in that between generations type position where the old guard, the likes of Ronaldinho and Kaká, not what they were, and the young lions, the likes of Neymar especially, not quite what they might be in a few years' time. But there's still a while to put that right. And Scolari, there's one thing that Scolari will certainly recall, because when he first took over in his first spell in 2001, a year before that World Cup in Japan and South Korea in 2002, it was absolutely inconceivable that Brazil would win that competition. They were an absolute shambles, and a year before the competition, their place in that World Cup was far from guaranteed. They were knocked out of the Copa America in Colombia, 2-0, deservedly so, by Honduras. So things were much, much blacker a year before 2002 than they are now.
There's been plenty of debate. I mean, you mentioned there Fred and how well he's done in that forward position for Brazil in the last few games. And we've all been expecting to be talking about Neymar rather than Fred. Is there any criticism, scepticism at all about how Neymar's progressing as a player? Because we've not seen his best except maybe in the Brazilian league. It's not happened on the international level yet.
It's never happened against opponents who know how to reduce space and know how to mark. Now, he is a remarkably gifted player, no doubt about that. But it is clear that he is having problems. Whenever he comes up against opponents, this isn't just European opponents, this has happened also in South America, who can compact up space, this is a problem for him. And having said that, his best performance for Brazil against heavyweight opposition was probably against Italy. And Italy, I have to say, field a very, very attacking midfield. There's no specialist marker there. And so Neymar was brought central rather than wide on the left. And he had space there to have a run. And he was instrumental in setting up both of Brazil's goals. But there is a debate going on in Brazil at the moment about the fact that he's still playing in domestic Brazilian football, especially as with Santos not in the Libertadores this year. The only domestic thing he's got at the moment is the São Paulo State Championship, which is of poor quality. There are many people who would argue that if he goes to Europe, he's going to week in, week out, come up against better defenders and teams who know how to defend better, collectively reducing his space. And that would stand him in good stead for the World Cup. The counter-argument would be that come the World Cup in June 2014, those players who've been in European football will be at the end of their season and thus perhaps running out of gas physically, while those players who are still in domestic Brazilian football will be mid-season and theoretically flying physically. So that's one justification for him staying until 2014. But this is something which is being debated long and hard in Brazil at the moment.
What about the rest of the road to Brazil 2014, and what's happening with Uruguay? We talk about Brazil maybe not performing as we expect. Uruguay on this horrible slide down the group at the moment. Is there any reason being brought out for that in South America at the moment? Because it's just not been happening, especially in the attacking stage of the game with Suarez and with Cavani.
Well, they've also let in 21 goals, which 11 games, which is equal with Paraguay, the worst in the group. So there is something going very badly wrong all over with Uruguay. That the defence isn't defending, the midfield isn't creating, the attack isn't scoring. And when you think in 2010 they were World Cup semi-finalists, in 2011 they won the Copa America, in June 2012 they were second in the qualification table with a game in hand. At the moment there's no wheels on their wagon. What we've seen is an ageing side just aged together, and this is relatively predictable, I think. And that side, it was together really since directly from the 2007 Copa America all the way through to now. That's a long, long time to keep a team together. And there comes a time when pieces in that team need replacement. Now, a huge and significant failure here was the London Olympics, because that was where Uruguay believed they had a really promising generation who were going to come in and just freshen up the senior side. The London Olympics campaign was frankly a disaster. And so that was the first knockback. And then you began to see the consequences of that aging side. Individual errors, the team collectively not quite what it was. And it was always a team. In all of their games reaching the World Cup semi-finals, the opponents had more possession, but Uruguay had more shots. So they're all always treading a fine line. If the opponents have more possession, that means you have to defend well. If you have less possession, that means you have to be efficient when you attack. So they're always treading a fine line. And once they declined just a little bit, then things started looking bleak for them. After two disastrous double-headed rounds, two in September, two in October, they regrouped during the FIFA friendly dates in November and February. They won very impressively 3-1 away to Poland and played very well, losing 3-1 to world champion Spain, and they thought they'd solved it. The coach, Oscar Washington Tabárez, thought he'd just tweaked his team enough. He'd given up on one of his two guard dogs in central midfield, one of his two specialist defensive midfielders, and he was looking for a midfield to elaborate a little bit more. So he thought he'd fixed it. What he's seen now, going in these last two rounds, a 1-1 draw at home to Paraguay and a 2-0 defeat away to Chile, is he hasn't fixed it. And that was a big disappointment to them. They probably deserved to beat Paraguay. It was a late defensive error from one of those veterans, the captain, Diego Lugano, that cost them victory. But they never showed against Paraguay the kind of form that they'd showed in those friendlies against Poland and against Spain. And they then had a very poor first half, especially after the penalty here and there. But I don't think there was any doubt that Chile were the better side. And the problem now for Tabárez is, which way does he turn? Because some of the players who've been letting him down are also some of the young players he's been bringing in. And it was a very poor piece of control by the right-back, Aguirre Garay, that helped set up Chile's first goal. His two attacking-based midfielders, Lodeiro and Ramirez, really didn't manage to impose themselves on the game at all against Chile, and that starved Suarez and Cavani of service. So it's a tough time now for Uruguay. They do traditionally do well in kind of backs-to-the-wall situations. Then they sit out the next round. Then they go to Venezuela. Absolute crunch game against a direct rival there against Venezuela. Suarez is suspended. And if you've seen that rabbit punch that he gave on Gonzalo Jara, FIFA have seen it, and he could be suspended for more games if they choose to punish him. So it really is back to the wall for Uruguay. And suddenly, the Confederations Cup in Brazil in the second half of June, instead of being just an inconvenience, suddenly it becomes an interesting place just to regroup, just to have a look at something else, have a look at other solutions in an environment which, if not fully competitive, is probably more than semi-competitive. So Uruguay will hope to regroup then and come back roaring down the final straight in September and October.
It's funny you mentioned about looking at different options. Do you think the fact that Suarez is banned and potentially for longer after FIFA have had a look at the incident on Gonzalo Jara, do you think that that could in some way turn into a positive spin, because it does force that change now?
I don't think losing your outstanding player can ever be seen as something positive. And so, no, it's a problem. But they have got Cavani, they have got Forlan, so that there are solutions there. What they need to find is a collective idea that works, and that's why I think the Confederations Cup becomes important. I don't think Suarez would have played it anyway. You have to remember that these players have gone a long time without holidays. You know, the World Cup, the Copa America, World Cup, the Olympics last year, and Suarez has gone a long, long time without holidays, and I think he needs a break during the Confederations Cup. So perhaps in that sense, leaving him out of the Confederations Cup is an opportunity to have a look at other solutions.
When we look at the momentum, just finally, Tim, in this one, in World Cup qualification in South America, you look at Ecuador and Colombia, despite their loss against Venezuela, no bad thing losing 1-0, as being in fantastic form. But it's this Argentina side that is really the cream of the crop, out and out, losing just one game so far in World Cup qualification. Are people starting to think that this is a side that compete with a Spain, with maybe the other kind of top sides in the world, and should be pushing for a World Cup final place come next summer?
I think I think you're right on the money with that kind of thinking. These were two great rounds for Alejandro Sabella, Argentina's coach. And Argentina, the only side to pick up 4 points in these two rounds. And when they met Venezuela and Bolivia the first time, in the second and third rounds of this campaign, Well, they lost away to Venezuela and they were held at home to Bolivia. And it looked at that point as if Argentina were really in for a bumpy ride to Brazil. Instead, it's turned into a cruise. And Sabella has found the blend. He's found an attacking blend. He's getting the best out of Messi. The form of Fernando Gago, I think, has been really important in that as a midfield architect. But when you've got Messi firing together with Aguero, Higuain and Di Maria, you have got a devastating array of attacking talent. And when they do fire together, I don't think that there's a more attractive team playing international football. The defence is still a problem. Sabella himself recently said that there are times when the opponents are attacking, he has to cover his face because the balance of his team is very much tipped towards attack. He'll have been very happy to see how they defended in the end against Bolivia, when they made lots of changes and did pretty well there in the extreme altitude of La Paz. And I think the important thing now is, and Argentina are all but qualified, and one victory will surely be enough from their remaining five games to get them over the line. And what they can do now, and whereas last time, 4 years ago, they were sweating on every point and the only priority was to qualify, now Sabella can start thinking in terms of building a team, not just to get to Brazil, but to win it. So he can look at options, he can look at other systems, he can look at defensive options especially. And he's a fan of the back three formation. He used it away to Venezuela right at the start of the qualification campaign. It didn't work at all. He used it against Bolivia on Tuesday and it worked better. Now he's got more time with his players to bed in other systems. Argentina have some tricky games coming up against difficult opponents. And that, instead of a disadvantage, now becomes an advantage because it means that other things can be tested and that he can really build a side, not only with attacking brilliance, but also with defensive efficiency. So I think without any question, Argentina have become, they have put themselves amongst the favourites to win the World Cup.
Tim, there's so much to talk about South American World Cup qualification. It's a shame that we can't have you for longer, but we appreciate you taking the time out to join us today and give us the overview, really, of everything that's going on down south of the border. Thank you so much for joining us, mate, and we look forward to getting you back on the show as soon as possible.
Look forward to it myself. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot there. Tim Vickery joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things South American World Cup qualification. Argentina, the absolute, as he says, the cream of the crop when it comes to that CONMEBOL World Cup qualification process. Lionel Messi and Gonzalo Higuain both with 7 goals each apiece in this World Cup qualification campaign. And I think that's been the key. It's not all about Messi in this Argentina side at all. You know, you can, that's the beautiful thing with Barcelona is that you know, you have Iniesta, you have Xavi, people, other players that can work the ball and punish you. And it's happening now on the international stage, which I think takes pressure off Messi. You know, it gives him more room to operate because there's other X factors around the pitch that can really interfere and can cause other teams problems and take attention away from Messi. It gives him, therefore, more room to operate in. And obviously then, you know, he's devastating. Let's not say anything more about it. He is the Tim Vickery of Argentinian football. You know what Tim is to South American sports reporting, Messi is to on the pitch. But I think now, because you've got, you know, a legitimate fantastic goal threat in Higuain, and you've got Di Maria who can be that creative player, and obviously Gago as well, it's really falling together. And I wouldn't be worried about facing Brazil. Well, I'd be worried about facing anybody if I was supporting England through a World Cup, but Brazil would not be the ones from South America at the moment that would be scaring me at this point in time. Argentina are a very, very, very scary force.
Generations. Did you not get that was one of my favorites from just now. A difference in generations. The old lions are moving on, and the new lions don't have what it takes to take over the pride. What?
Well, we were talking about that yesterday a bit about Neymar and how he's not coming on leaps and bounds, and it's interesting that it's being talked about in Brazil in the same way. You know, it would almost sound a little bit like sour grapes if it was the English press talking about it and saying, oh, well, Neymar's not really coming on very well, is he? Oh, look at your wonder kid. Oh, our one didn't do well in terms of Wayne Rooney. But Neymar's not really coming on as the Messi either. But in fact, because it's being talked about now in that at such an early stage still in this player's development, but still being talked about in Brazil, the fact that Neymar isn't coming on as we'd all hope to see. You know, as Tim says, you're a very skillful player. You can see that, but he still doesn't. I think it's more a case of composure. you know, you look at someone like, we were talking about Xavi, Iniesta and Alonso, and how, you know, teams can try and smother them out, crowd them out of a football game, and it doesn't really affect them too much. They always find that space to operate in. And I think you can look at Messi in that same way. And I think Neymar, that's that composure he needs to learn to operate when, you know, people are gunning for him. When he knows that people are trying to smother him out of the game, he needs to sit and kind of just learn how to operate in that sort of situation. Take his time, take a breath, stay cool, relax, and just get on with producing the skill that we know that he has, and just start producing it more on the pitch. It'd be very interesting indeed to see your thoughts and views on Neymar's progress. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483, of course, is the phone number as well. And you can catch us on the Facebook page as well. A massive thanks to Tim Vickery for joining us here on WFD. We're going to take a very quick break indeed. When we come back, I'm going to be getting Rafa to make some bold predictions about what's going to happen in the final few weeks of our European football calendar. We'll be back in just a sec.